You're tuned to KDWA AM 1460, FM 97.7, and this is Community In-Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rood, and I have in the studio with me today Minnesota State Representative for District 54B, Tony Juergens. Good day, Tony. How are you?
It's great to be back, Mike. It seems like it's been forever since we've done one of these, even though we had special sessions every month. It's like the legislature never left, but it's good to be back here today now that we're back into regular session.
Regular, something we might want to call normal and getting down to the regular business.
Right.
I also wanted to just cover really quick and let our listeners know that one of the other reasons we hadn't talked to you a lot after, say, June or July is that you were hospitalized for heart condition.
I did. I had a bit of a heart thing going on. I had a few appointments throughout the summer and in October, found out that I had to have bypass surgery. So on October 19th, I went up to United in St. Paul and had quintuple bypass surgery. And that was a couple of weeks before the election. So I did zero campaign work in the last couple of weeks. I was in the hospital for about a week and then recovering at home. But since then, I've been going to cardiac rehab here in Hastings, and things are going well, and I'm healing up, and I'm ready to hit the road running now.
Exactly. And I would like to say you look well for having just gone through that kind of an event. I had my own back in 2012. But you do look well. It looks like you're ready to go and ready to hit the floor of the house running.
I lost a few pounds, but I wouldn't recommend this as a diet.
Probably not.
Not a good way to do it.
No, you know, go in there, take a few out with you. Take a few pounds out. Anyway, the session started on Monday, and you got sworn in on Monday. That was by Zoom, is that correct? Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, it was a little bit different. You know, I remember my first term, the swearing in, it was something I'll never forget. You have family members join you on the House floor, the rotunda or the House chamber is absolutely packed with people. There's a lot of procedural things, and it's just something you'll always remember. And I feel bad for the first term members this year who didn't get to experience the same thing.
Right.
Many of us that have been sworn in the past weren't in the House chambers. We were in our offices at the state office building across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, the new members did get to go into the chambers, and family members could be at the Capitol, but not in the chamber with them. So it was a little bit different for them. But they did, they swore in nine of us at a time so that the chief clerk could pull us up on the screen on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
So we were doing it virtually, but they, for their records, needed to be able to see that we were the ones that were on the other end.
Right.
And that we were standing and we had our, you know, right hand raised. So they did nine at a time, and they just went through alphabetically, and I stood by myself in my office.
Wow.
Had to prop my laptop on. I had my refrigerator and then a microwave and a couple of books to get it at the right level. Yeah, one of my colleagues snuck in behind me and took a picture. I didn't even know he was there.
No, it's a good thing you weren't wearing Zubas. Huh?
Well, that's what somebody said. I think Tony Nelson, former council member, I think he commented on Facebook and said that it would have been even better if I would have been wearing sweatpants or something along with that. Or maybe it was somebody said, I don't remember.
Suit, coat, tie, you know, nice shirt.
Yep, and
sweatpants.
Shorts. Right. Could have done that. So, but we're happy to get started again. We have a lot of work that we need to do this year, and we'll get into that as we're talking today, Mike. But it was a different experience, but it always means something special when you take that oath that to uphold the Constitution and the responsibilities that are given to us by the voters, in my case here in Hastings and throughout District 54B. So I'm just very proud to be given that honor. I never take it lightly. It's something that really means a lot to me. And I appreciate the confidence that they gave in me, and will do my best to represent the people.
I would guess that going through the swearing-in process is also kind of a sobering moment in the life of a representative, an elected official, where they consider the words of the oath and the weight that they carry.
Yes. You know, it takes about 10 seconds. It's very brief,
but
there's a huge amount of meaning that goes behind it. And I, you know, I have never taken it for granted. It means just as much this time as it did the first time, even though the process was much different this year.
Excellent. After the oath of office and the session begins, there is assignment of committees. And where will you be serving in committees this session?
We got our committee assignments just very recently. It took a while to get those out. I'll be on the Workforce and Business Development Committee. That the name of the committee is a little bit different. It's similar to one in the past. It was just called the Jobs Committee. Mm-hmm. What that committee does, and we don't even know yet the full scope of what that committee will entail, but it's the DEED budget, the Department of Employment and Economic Development budget.
Okay.
A good portion, almost all of the budget for that department will come through this committee. So I don't know, that's probably about $125 million worth of the overall budget.
Sure.
That will be come up through. There's different programs, employment type programs that we will be dealing with, the bills in there and the hearings we'll mm-hmm. have in that committee. So that'll be an interesting one. I'm looking forward to that. Also on the Housing Finance and Policy Committee, that's one I was also on last year.
Okay.
Representative Hausman is the chair of that committee, and I have a great relationship with her. So I'm looking forward to that. Housing is such a huge issue throughout the state of Minnesota. And last year, I remember a lot of the bills that we heard in committee had to do with unfair leases that people would like to see changes made to. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those have to do with around the U of M and the student housing. Yeah. And, students that are forced to pay for 12 months when they're not going to be there for 12 months and having that accounted for, giving the renters a little more a few more rights, I guess you could say.
Okay.
But you also have to keep in mind that, these are landlords mm-hmm. that are, most of them are good. You hear some yes. horror stories of, mm-hmm. of bad landlords, and you want to take them into consideration too. But most of these landlords are doing the right thing. We don't want to punish them. We just want to make it workable for both sides.
And do you expect any legislation to come through that committee regarding the moratorium on evictions or anything like that?
Yeah, I expect that we will hear that. And I hear a lot from some of our constituents. I mean, I don't think anybody would like to see people put onto the street,
right?
Especially in times of COVID when they lost their job and now that it's cold and things like that. But any of the aid that comes in, we need to consider the landlords as well, because a lot of times these aren't big corporations. These are, a couple that's part of their retirement. They bought a couple of duplexes and they live off of the rent. And well, if that rent's not coming in, that impacts them as well. And they still have mortgages to pay in some cases or whatever it is. Yep. So again, it's you just have to take both sides into consideration and make sure that any solutions that we come up with are equitable. One of the issues that came up frequently last year, again, I mentioned around the student housing around the University of Minnesota and other colleges. Well, keep in mind, most of the laws, unless we specify a geographic area, we can make a law that impacts the students around the University of Minnesota campus, mm-hmm. but that law is statewide. So somebody living in Crookston or somebody living in Wilmer then has to live by the same law. So we have to make sure that if there are issues that are specific to one geographic area, we have to take that into consideration as well.
Sure. It makes it kind of an interesting pathway to tread to get all the issues addressed equitably. I don't want to say equally, but equitably.
Equitably. Yeah. And we heard that from some of the members as we were listening to presentations on different bills, that they would say, well, that's not a problem in my area. And now but it would impact them if we changed the law. So,
sure.
The other committee that I'm on is the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. Looking forward to that as well. I've got a daughter that works in the daycare field here in Hastings, so she was happy to hear that I'm on that committee this year.
Yeah, and there was the cause that you were very much working on hard last year for school lunches.
Yep.
So that kind of translates into that committee, I think,
a little
bit.
Yeah, and I'll be working on that again this year. But mm-hmm. the when you put everything in the state, it's like a big jigsaw puzzle. We're talking about jobs with the workforce committee that I'm on. Well, a big problem that some employers have is finding employees. And one of the reasons is they don't have good childcare. One spouse has to stay home with the children if they can't find good childcare. Now, here in the metro area, we have more options. Mm-hmm. But in greater Minnesota and some of the small towns, they might not have the options. And so one parent doesn't work when they wanted to, or maybe they could, you know, they're able to, they just don't have childcare.
Right.
So if that's something that we can deal with at a state level, to help out, you know, there's different ideas like tax breaks for, daycare centers or something like that to help them keep their costs down. So to make childcare more affordable, you know, if there are some things that we could do there that will help families, help kids, help their parents, and in the end, it might help some employers too.
Exactly. And of course, the big elephant in the middle of the room for this year is going to be the budget.
That's the big thing that we're here for this year.
We're going to get, what do they call that, the March forecast in February or something like that?
Yes, we got it.
And then you got to start work on the budget from that point. Tell me a little bit about that.
So this year we're expecting, first of all, in Minnesota, we budget for a biennium. It's a two-year budget.
Mm-hmm.
We do it in the first year of the biennium. So right now we've got about 6 months left of the current biennium.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent forecast has a projection of a $641 million surplus, which is good news because the previous budget forecast was a over $1 billion budget deficit. So mm-hmm. the tax receipts were a little bit higher than what they expected. It took the current biennium from a deficit to a surplus. However, the biennium that we will be budgeting for, the 21-22 budget years, we do have a projected deficit of about $1.5 billion.
Sure.
We'll get that number will be updated, like you said, the February forecast will come out,
mm-hmm.
and then that's what we will be budgeting on. So we'll have our target numbers, and there's a, you know, there's different ways, just like with a family budget. If you have more money going out than you have coming in, you have to either increase the money coming in or decrease the money going out.
Right.
Now, I think with a state budget, what I've been saying all along is that I think we can grow our way out of this. Our economy was moving along at a great clip prior to COVID.
We
had surplus after surplus.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that all changed when businesses get shut down and people aren't working. They're not spending money as much. That impacts the state budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, the sooner we can safely get businesses reopened and get back to as close to normal or a new normal or whatever it is, I think we can grow our way to a budget surplus again. I don't think that we need to be looking at tax increases. I don't think it hurts to be looking at, you know, where places that you can cut inefficiencies, mm-hmm. and spend money, yep. more wisely.
Sure.
So I think we should do that. But that's the big thing we're going to be accomplishing this year. And we have in our Constitution, it states that we must have a balanced budget. We can't, yep. deficit spend. We can't print money like the feds do. So one way or another, we'll get to a balanced budget by the end of, if not by the end of session, then we go to a special session, which nobody wants. So hopefully by the end of May, we've got a budget in place that we can all agree on. It's not going to be an easy thing to do ever. But when you throw in the fact that it's probably going to be in the neighborhood of $50 billion, and we're doing a lot of it remotely over Zoom, that just adds even more challenge. It's one thing, yep. to be in a room where you're looking across the room and you're having a conversation, negotiating, compromising, whatever it is. That's a little bit different when you're doing that remotely, mm-hmm. over Zoom or over the phone.
Yeah. And I just want to briefly mention, too, that Governor Walz recently made a declaration, well, if you want to call it that, he came out and said that they'll start reopening restaurants and stuff again starting like Monday, January 11th.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good start to work into that process where they're now generating their income again and the whole system starts again slowly to move?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all say we're all in this together, but that's really not the case. Some businesses and bars and restaurants, fitness centers, their theaters, those are businesses that have sacrificed more than a lot of people have.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important to get them reopened. We've always said we want to do that safely. You know, I think most people are saying that we don't just rip the Band-Aid off and open everything up at 100% with no precautions. I mean, I don't think that would make sense either. I think it makes sense to do it safely. But I also think that, you know, use bars and restaurants as an example. they want to do things right because mm-hmm. they know that they want to protect their customers. They want to protect their employees. They know that if the customers don't feel safe, they're not going to come out.
Right.
So it's in their best yes. interest to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that since the right around Thanksgiving, when those industries were shut down again, but just across the border in Wisconsin, they weren't. And if you watch the daily numbers, yeah, our numbers have gone down, but so has Wisconsin's. I mean, there hasn't been a big difference between the two states.
Sure.
Meanwhile, a lot of Hastings residents have been going over to Prescott for dinner, and the restaurant owners here in Hastings are watching them do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any choice. So I'm glad to see that happen. We do want to, we don't want to see a resurgence in numbers. I think that now with the vaccines coming out, we're headed in the right direction. It might be still a long, cold few months as we're, you know, waiting to get to the other side of this. But I think we're hopefully going in the right direction. And I, for one, am going to be happy to see some of the local restaurants open again, even if it's at 50% capacity.
Exactly. And we have about a minute or two left, and that makes it for an excellent segue. People are going to have a chance to voice their concerns coming up on Wednesday, when you, Representative Franke, and Senator Bigham will mm-hmm. be having a virtual town hall meeting.
Yeah.
Bring me up to date on that a little bit.
So, yeah, we're accommodating, too, because of the it's easier to do something like this and safer to do it remotely. So if you have questions that you want answered during that town hall meeting, just send me an email at rep.tony.jurgens@house.mn, and we'll do our best to get that on. It's going to be streamed on YouTube. You can go to my social media pages, and we'll have plenty. You'll be able to find the link to the YouTube mm-hmm. where you can see that.
We're also putting that link on the KDWA
okay,
homepage at kdwa.com and our news page. We'll share that on social media also. Looks like it's going to be a very interesting session. You have your work cut out for you. And for our listeners, I want to remind you that you will be updating us every week. You'll be coming in and we'll be having a session with you. Let us know what's going on at the Capitol. You gave your email address. I also encourage listeners, if they have questions or concerns, to reach out to you, mm-hmm. not just for the virtual town hall coming up, but restaurant owners, just regular constituents. If you have questions or concerns, you are available.
Absolutely. My phone number is 651-296-3135. You can call me there anytime. And most of the time, you might have to leave a message. Our staffing at the Capitol now is sporadic because we do a lot of work from home.
Mm-hmm.
But that we do check it daily or several times a day.
Excellent. Representative Jurgens, I thank you for your time to come in and share the segment with me today.
And I appreciate the opportunity to do it. I always look forward to it. And it's always fun when I get out in the community and people say, hey, I heard you on the radio. So I appreciate the opportunity to come in here and visit with you, Mike.
Excellent. Thank you very much. This is Community In-Depth on KDWA, AM 1460, FM 97.7.